I'm right there.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I needed to spit my gum out. It was a bad call.
My sobriety date is September 16th, 2018. I'm actively sponsored and my home group meets on Thursday nights at 7:30 in Bethesda. All are welcome. It's a lovely meeting. It's really big. But thank you for having me. And Billy, thank you so much for inviting me over. And I actually really like that you read those two paragraphs. Because for me, that was huge. And the area that I grew up in, I mean, I wasn't raised, you know, accordingly with other alcoholics. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. And for me to relate in was such an incredible experience. And it wasn't that I was embarrassed to be an alcoholic. It wasn't that, you know, I wasn't ready, but I just needed someone to hear, or I needed to hear that someone else related to the way I felt. But thank you for having me again. Hi, everyone online. I didn't get nervous until 5:59. And I'm grateful because in the beginning of my sobriety, when I was asked to leave meetings, I would think about it for weeks. And now I just thought about it 1 minute before the meeting. So I was actually on the phone with my mom outside, who's also in AA. I was like, Mom, I don't know if I can talk for 55 minutes. She was like, oh. Yeah, you can. You're good. And I was like, thanks. No, but I'm very grateful to be here, and I will share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to try mostly to talk about my sobriety because so many things have happened. But I'll start from the beginning. I was born and raised in Montgomery County, Maryland. My perception of my childhood has definitely changed over the years I've been sober. But how it is black and white, I was given everything I ever needed, everything I ever wanted. I went to private school for 10 years. I would say the only things that really made me feel like apart from were my parents' divorce when I was 1 year old. I was kind of the glue that kept it together. My mom found out she was pregnant with me. She said, let's make it work. Didn't work. My dad was an active alcoholic. My mom is soon to be identified as a member of AA also. And so growing up, you know, there were a couple things that also made me feel different. My mom stopped working when she was 33, when I was about 2 years old, and we lived, off of my grandparents' money. And going to a private school for 10 years, when people ask you, when they're holding the bags and wearing the shoes, you know, it was uniform, but we could wear kind of what we wanted for the shoes and our backpacks and stuff. They'd be like, well, what do your parents do? And I was like, it's only my mom and I don't know what she does. So I went home to my mom and I was like, what are you? And she was like, I'm self-employed. You can say that. And I was like, okay. And, I started, you know, when I was younger, I started to feel a little different then, you know, by that fact. And, you know, I was very sporty in a town with a lot of, the best way to describe it is, you know, girly girls, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, I was raised differently, and I'm not trying to say that as like a primer of why I'm an alcoholic. You know, my mind started separating me from people from the time I can remember. So yeah, growing up, I mean, I was a straight A kid, you know, I have asked my aunts and uncles in the past, you know, like how it was like, I'm the oldest cousin in my family and I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old cousin also, and they're nuts. So I often am asking them, how was I when I was growing up? And they're like, you're sweet, you're bubbly, you're bouncy, you didn't talk back, you didn't argue. So it sounded like I was a pretty good kid. And I want to say it wasn't until early high school, I really started developing, you know, I noticed the thoughts in my head. I hit puberty later than other females in my class. I started worrying, overcompensating for things, noticing how other people are acting versus how I was acting. And that's like a lot of stuff for a little kid, you know? And, this is also the time where I started therapy, started medication. I was promptly given ADHD medicine actually when I was 5. And, as I was older, it was just kind of like, this is her problem. So we're just going to keep giving her medications, you know? And my first drink, I was 16, sophomore in high school, And it's funny, I work with this girl now who brought me to the party. She's lovely. But let me rewind really quick. I was about to go to this party and my mom had a sit down conversation with me. She said, "Hey, I just want to make something clear. I know you haven't drinking," because I hadn't. And we were very honest about that. It was just me and her growing up. She was my best friend. And she said, "Your dad's an alcoholic. I have an abnormal relationship with alcohol." She's now in AA. Steer clear as long as you can, because there's a lot of family members in our family that struggle with this. And I said, "Got it." So I stayed away for as long as I could. But this party, I don't know why I agreed to go. I was terrified. I remember that morning, my friend Carly and I went to Target and I bought these bright yellow jeans with this floral top. I was going to look great. You know, I don't even know how I remember that, but this night is so vivid in my memory, because I went to the party and I was absolutely terrified. I don't know why I said yes. Why am I here? I'm an outcast. I'm 2 years younger than everyone here. Everyone's going to think I'm weird. Why is Caitlin here? All of this noise in my head. And so I ran to the bathroom, was crying 20 minutes. And Carly finally found me. And she brought down a 6-pack of Bud Light. And she said, "Drink this, come up when you're feeling better." And I hadn't had an experience with alcohol prior to this. Another note that my mom had told me in our conversation, she said before this party, she said, "Only have one drink. And that's it." And I was like, okay, if I am gonna have a drink, I can do that. So I had one beer and I remember drinking it, and it was about 5/6 of the way empty. And I was like, I really like this, but I can't have more than one. So I'll just put this one down that's not empty and open up another one. Drink that. And then put it down. And that's just what I did. And I convinced myself that I hadn't had one drink. So the party was great. You know, I love hearing this in AA, because this is one of the things that I related to so much. My impact, the impact that alcohol had on me. I had a crush on this guy who was a senior and I talked to him immediately. I was funny. I was loud. I was the person you wanted to talk to. Just this new thing that had come out of me. And the cops came, we jumped the fence of this house all around through Avenel golf course. And I don't know if you guys have been to Potomac, Maryland. It's very that. So kids running through Avenel, it's pretty obvious. It's just a golf course, you know, no trees. So we're ducking and diving. And I remember I had branched off with the captain of my lacrosse team. Man, I just remember this, but her shirt smelled like beer. And she was like, "Oh, my mom's going to kill me if she finds out that I've had beer." So I was like, "No worries. I'll take the blame." So we switched shirts and her mom ended up picking us up. I don't even know what hole. We ran very far. It was so chaotic. She picked us up and she just kept saying "Caitlin, I can't believe you drank. I didn't know you were like this." And I was like, because I saved Molly's night, you know, her mom didn't know that she drank. So, that night actually did, you know, I had such a great time, but it definitely did scare me. You know, I was really committed to sports. I had a conversation with my lacrosse coach that I wanted to go to D1 for lacrosse. And so that meant, you know, summer times I'm always busy, you know, traveling, getting recruited, writing emails, sending all these things. And so I told myself, I won't drink until I'm committed to college. And so I didn't. And something happened. That was my first drink at 16, and I didn't have another one until I just turned 18. And something happened to me in those years that I had never acted that way before. I was angry. I couldn't sleep. I was gossiping about everyone. I was a center of drama and just love. I was just so angry, so mad, and I couldn't have told you why. The thoughts were ramping up. You know, I was just miserable. And this in turn increased more therapy and all of these things. And my mom, you know, once I officially got sober and people, and I started doing my 9-step, the stealing of peace of mind really hit home for me. 'Cause my mom did the best she could. And I remember she would wake up when I turned 18, when I was junior and senior, she would call my grandma and she'd be like, Caitlin is so mad, so miserable. And I don't know what to do. You know, like I've given her more permission with her car, more leeway with all these things, hanging out with these people. What should I do? And my grandma was like, well, she really likes chocolate chip pancakes. It's not wrong. Love chocolate chip pancakes. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, great, I'll wake up, make the pancakes and bring them to her in bed. And she didn't tell me this until I got sober, but she would make me chocolate chip pancakes. And one morning I'd be like, oh, Mom, thank you so much. The next morning I would cry and I just tell her all about my problems. Another morning I would take the chocolate chip pancakes and throw them at her. And it was just a toss up. I didn't ever know how my emotional reaction was going to be to anything, nice, mean, emotional, anything. And, I started to avoid people heavily. You know, I only lived 15 or 20 minutes away from my school. So I really only had to get up at 7, but I started getting up at 6 to avoid my mom. I would get a parking spot in the lot that was far away from people. I could walk and like, I had my little nook in the school. So I wouldn't talk to anyone. And I just like felt so isolated and afraid. And I don't remember my second drink, but I started drinking after I committed to a school in Florida. And I was having the best time. I was like, why was my junior year so bad and my senior year so great? You know, I was hanging out with the people I wanted to hang out with, you know, the people that I wanted to do stuff that they were doing. And so to speed up high school, my freshman year of college, I fit right in. You know, I went to a school in Jacksonville, Florida, and the beach is 12 minutes away from campus. You know, it's perfect. And yeah, I mean, I knew who my roommate was going to be 2 years before college. And so we had visited each other in Baltimore many times. The girls that I drank with and the guys that I drank with drank just like me. And my drinking was really hidden. I was just having fun. And what ended up happening was it was winter break. And if I get emotional, I'm going to try to hone it in because I led a meeting last week in it. And I had to really super pause, but I went home, and around this time of my junior, senior year of high school and freshman year of college, I got really close with my dad. He wasn't really available. He loved me the hardest he could. And we were developing this new relationship where we were calling each other every day. He would tell me funny stories. You know, it wasn't just like, hi daughter, hi dad, you know, just like casual, what's up. He would tell me about his childhood and all these cool adventures he had gone on. And he actually started writing me in college. So I have a stack of letters. And I was in Florida for a family vacation. And my mom got a call from my half brother that said my dad had a massive heart attack and was in the hospital. And this was probably December 29th because he passed on New Year's Eve, but basically he had told me that they were just waiting for me to come home so I could sign the papers to unplug him. And like another switch went off in me that I just couldn't bear the circumstances of my life. And I wish I could stand here and say that the reason I was so upset with my dad's passing was because he won't, you know, be here when I get married, when I have my first kids. You know, I ended up getting sober. I can be a daughter, like all of these things. I wish I thought that, but honestly, my first thought was, how is this going to affect me? You know, like how am I going to be able to handle this? Me, 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 me. And, another thing to be honest about was that was like I use that for why my drinking escalated, you know, I asked my mom for just one more week to have off of break. I just needed to collect myself. She said, no, you're going back to school. And I was like, well, I'm going to go back to school hard then. And I drank and, you know, the person that I had become from who I used to be when I was 8, 9, 10 years old looked completely opposite. You know, my morals were out the window. This is just part of my experience, but I slept with whoever I wanted. I drank whatever I wanted. I ended up in places I was not supposed to end up in. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Jacksonville, Florida, but there's a bar right across college campus. It's a billiard bar. I love drinking at billiard bars. I don't know why. But I would walk home like the 2 miles from that bar alone back to campus. And there were so many nights when, you know, people would get kidnapped, you know, and like, I wasn't raised this way. Why am I acting like this? All of these things. And so kind of a last minute decision, at the end of my sophomore year, I said, I need a transfer. I have a 1.2 GPA. And you got to work hard to get 1.2. Yeah. Like, really fair. And my coach wasn't happy with me, all of these things. And I was telling my mom this. I was like, I need to go. Like, I need to go. And what I didn't tell her, which I realized once I got sober, was I was really afraid of my drinking. You know, I wasn't honest with the people that I loved the most to tell them, like, hey, I ended up at this place. I was terrified. This happened to me. All of these things, I couldn't bear it. So I just thought I'd just leave. So I transferred to a school in Newark, Delaware. And that was actually the number one party school of that year that I transferred. But I had these promises to myself, like kind of like the promise that I told myself, you know, about not drinking till I was committed. You know, I wasn't gonna drink for the first 3 months, get accustomed. I was gonna make friends, make good decisions. I was gonna work harder. And they all kind of went out the window like the third week. And I kind of took my behaviors from Florida to Delaware, and people were like, that's really weird that you do these things. Like, I loved dipping. I loved dipping. And they were like, that's really weird. And I was like, oh, you know, no problem. I'll just stop. But you know, this, I started getting this habit where I would pre the pregame, because the girls that I was hanging out with took forever to get ready. I just can't handle that. So I'd pre the pregame, go to the pregame. Everyone's getting ready, having a blast, talking with each other. I'm not talking, you know, like I'm going to the bathroom, taking sips of whatever. We go to the party and I would hit a point. I remember this so clearly. I would hit a point where I was like, I had found the line, you know, like the line that I would hit. I'm kind of browning out and I enjoy that because it's taking time away and I'm feeling good. But I knew I wasn't going to stop there because my second thought was, but I want this feeling to keep going. Like I want to keep this feeling. And I would, you know, presently know when I was going to overshoot that mark. So I would just walk home and drink back at home. And so my drinking was a little more hidden, my junior year of college. And by my senior year, what had happened was I went through a breakup and I went immediately to my psychiatrist. I was 21. I think you can like go to a doctor by yourself and you don't have your parents can't see what you have once you turn 21. I don't know if it's 18 or 21, but I feel like it's 21. And so I was like, hey doc, I'm sad and I need something to help me feel better. And she was like, no problem, antidepressants. And so I started taking the antidepressants and this was just my experience, you know, but I started taking those and I felt better with the little amount that I was on. And so I thought, oh, what if I triple that amount, you know? And so I told my doctor, call my doctor, oh, it's still not working. Like, I'm so sad. Like, and I say, and I'm joking about being sad because I was not intensively using it for its purpose. You know, I just wanted to feel better. Yeah. And so I ended up being on like 350 milligrams of an antidepressant, 400 milligrams of Adderall and drinking and, you know, AA meeting, but weed's definitely part of my story. And this combination of all of these things sent me into a manic psychosis blackout for 3 months. And I remember sitting there are parts of those 3 months that I remember and a bunch of them that I don't, but I remember sitting in the sports psychologist room and she said, hey, thanks for coming in. I just want to have a conversation with you. There's been a lot of people that have reached out to me about your mental health and well-being. I think it's best for either two options. One, you just leave and don't come back, or you take a year, go to therapy 3 times a week, and then, you know, we'll reevaluate you. And my first thought was like, who are these people who are talking to you? You know what I mean? I'm fine. Like, I'm manic. you know, I'm like queen of the world. That's how I feel. And so I agreed. I said, okay. And I'm only on campus for 2 weeks. I mean, excuse me, 2 months. And I said, okay, well then I'll leave. That'll be fine. And so that was probably beginning of October. And at the end of October, I was kind of staying there, like packing up my stuff. Not really. I was drinking my mom's money away. And on October Halloween, I started feeling weird. My body, I would get really big lumps on my back. It felt like a lot of pain. They thought I had like a slip disc or something. We didn't know. And this had been happening my last couple weeks there. And on November 1st, I woke up. I couldn't move my body. The only thing that saved me was Siri, which is really weird. I was like, hey, Siri, call 911. But it turned out I had sepsis, and I went to the hospital. I couldn't move. My body was shutting down. Thank God, by the sixth antibiotic, they were able to clear the blood infection. But I was in the hospital for a week, you know, after the way I was living. And it was scary. I mean, I remember sitting in that hospital bed, and all I could think about was the way I felt. I was like, but it wasn't pain. It was like spiritual. I was like, oh, I feel like I need somebody to take me out of myself. I've never been sober this long. You know, do they know the medical benefits of marijuana? Should I ask the nurse for a joint? Like, that's what was going on in my mind. And my mom's thinking, do I have to bury my 21-year-old daughter? You know? And so I had to do a lot of, I don't want to say PT, but a lot of like medicine work to flush out my kidneys and my livers, because I had a double kidney infection that ran to my liver. And, so I went home, you know, that was like the big kicker. My mom was like, all right, you're coming right back home. And while I was home, I had a therapist. Like I said, I had to go see one 3 times a week, which is a lot of talking. That's a lot of talking. And we had been, you know, discussing what I've been doing, and I was telling her, you know, I'm not drinking. I was never going to tell her about my drinking. She didn't know. She didn't ask. But I started telling her about the other things I was doing. And I think it was after like 2 or 3 weeks, she was like, hey, so I have these friends that know a lot about what you're struggling with. I'm having a hard time, you know, precisely understanding the main point that you're struggling with, but I feel like my friends could find out for you. Would you give them a call? And I was like, yeah, like I've had a problem for so long. I would love to know my problem. And she slid me an outpatient rehab card. And I was like, no, this is so bad. But she said it so well. I mean, we joked about it today. I was like, that was a really good way to say it. And so I had my intake. And I'm trying to remember, I had the intake, and I'm dating someone who had the same experience, but I went in like very like business casual, like they weren't going to see through my stuff, you know? And cause I was like, if I look better than I feel, then they're probably going to reject me cause I'm not an alcoholic. So I went in and I did the intake, and I remember this woman asked me a question. It was like the last question. And she said, she said, what's your favorite drink? And I said, I enjoy tequila. Like I enjoy it casually. And she was like, great. Well, if I put one shot of tequila in front of you, just one right now, would you drink it? And I was like, no, why would I drink that? And she was like, well, you just said you like to drink it casually, right? And I was like, yeah, but that's like not enough tequila for me to enjoy, you know? And so then I started on Monday. That was a Friday. I started on Monday, a 3-time failure of IOP, the same one, you know, but that taught me a lot. It taught me that, you know, first of all, I'm really stubborn. I'm a very stubborn person. But it introduced me to fellowships, you know? And so I started going to meetings here and there. Didn't really relate. I mean, my ears were off, you know, I just wanted to check the box. I just want to get this over with. And there was a point in time where I had relapsed, drank again. And my mom sent me right into the psych ward because she didn't know what else to do. I was dating someone and he said that he had some drugs, and I said, give me some. And he's like, no, that's, you were just in IOP. I chased him down Great Seneca Highway. Cops were called. I was thrown into the psych ward. It's a whole thing. I deserve to be there. But, you know, I remember that the next morning, I woke up in the psych ward. I was in so much fear. I can't believe I landed here, you know. Again, with the thinking about how it used to be versus where I am now, why is this happening? And another thing, I didn't remember this, but my mom had told me that that next morning, my mom came to visit me. She visited me every day, twice a day. And I looked at her, and with tears in my eyes, I said, why did you put me here? Why am I here right now? She's like, do you not remember what happened? I was like, I do, but it's your fault that I'm here. Why would you do this to me? You know, and I mean, it broke her heart. You know, I was living in such a false reality, trying to fix my own problems and to feel better, that I didn't care what was happening to the ones that I loved around me. And so I left the psych ward, went into rehab, got out of rehab. And I kind of just did the same stuff. I would do this cycle where I would say, okay, obviously I can't drink because I'm getting introduced to AA meetings. That's given. So I'm going to try this substance. And that wouldn't work. So then I'd be like, okay, well, I can't do alcohol or this. I'll just drink Mucinex or ZQL. And so I just did that. And then I'd be like, no, I can't. That's crazy. Can't drink ZQL. It's like really nuts to just drink a bottle of ZQL and like throw it away at like 7-Eleven. So I'll just go back to alcohol. And it was just this cycle over and over again for the next 6 or 8 months. And so I finally told my mom, I said, I'm having a hard time. I think I need to go on Antabuse, which is like an alcohol blocker. She said, okay. And so I went on it. I was so anxious by that decision that I started Googling, you know, how long does it take to get out of your body? And it was like, I don't remember. It was anywhere between 60 to 180 hours. And I was like, this is unacceptable. Like, and so I waited for like 74 hours. I was like, that's the middle. My body's tough. Usually like if I don't get sick too much, like it just pushes. I have a good immune system. It'll just push itself right out. And that's not what happened. I drank a lot. And I wasn't feeling anything. And so I thought, oh, I know exactly what'll make me feel better. You know, I'll just like smoke a little weed and then I'll start to feel it. Maybe that'll loosen it up. And I did that. And the last memory I have was I stood up and I just like threw up. And it was my poor friend's house. Like, she didn't know what was happening. She was like, did you drink before this? And I was like, no, did not drink before this. And it's just like happening on her floor. And I woke up the next morning with my mom sitting at the edge of my bed, and you know, my hair is gross, like everything's everywhere. And she just kind of looked at me. She said, I don't know what to do anymore. What do you need from me right now? And I said, I want to try going to college again. I want to find the meetings. I really want to be sober. And I really meant it. Like, I meant that I wanted to be sober and I wanted to get my college degree. And I wanted to make myself proud, her proud, everyone around me proud. And so I went up there, and I went up August 1st, and school was going to start on the 28th. And what that month looked like was I was in my bed nonstop. Excuse me, it's kind of gross, but there were pee bottles everywhere. You know, my bathroom in my apartment was less than 5 feet away. I couldn't make it out of my bed because I was terrified of drinking, you know? And it was like my first like honest 28 days sober, but like I was so miserable. And it was just a matter of time before something was going to happen, you know? And it did. You know, I was cleared to play lacrosse again. I was cleared to go to classes. So I registered and the girls started coming back. And this sounds so crazy. I can't believe I'm going to say this. But so I started, they were like, hey, you want to come out with us? Trying to be nice. You know, they didn't know what was going on with me. But so they're like, you want to come out with us? Like, we're going to go to like a day party and like hang out there for a little bit and then go to a bar. And I was like, yeah, I'll just go sober. You know, like, that's totally fine. And I remember there was a studying nurse on the team, and she was like, so yeah, well, and she was so, so sweet. We both transferred in with each other. And she was talking to me, she's like, what happened last year? You know, like, none of us know, you know, we were told that you left on medical leave, like, what ended up happening? I said something like, oh, I found AA and I'm sober, and I've been sober for a month. And I hadn't been going to AA meetings. I never did anything here. I was not a member, you know? And she was like, well, do you think it's going to be tough going to these parties? And I said, do you see this backpack that I'm wearing? And she was like, yeah. I was like, it's empty, but it has God in it. That's why I'm going to stay sober, because I've God in this empty backpack. And I was like, do you see it? It was the craziest thing. And she was like, okay, like, cool. And so I went to the party and I drank. And it was because I heard a really good song. And I was like, this song would feel really great to be drunk to. So I drank. And I saw that. And I went home so embarrassed, so sad. And I tried to convince myself one last time of trying to have the right formula so that I can be sane, but out of my mind at the same time. And so I thought, well, I'll just try to control drinking. No biggie. You know, normal people drink after 8. I'm going to do that. The first night I did that. Not really. The second night I said, well, 8 sounds a little too late. I'm trying to go to bed at 10. You know, I want to like be on my phone while I'm drinking. So why don't I do like 6:30? And by day 4, I had woken up at 6 a.m. and drank. And it didn't hit me until that night that something had happened in my mind where I recognized what was happening. And by the 5th day, I woke up at 5:30 a.m. I'm crying. I finally see how crazy my life is, you know, and it's not as crazy as, you know, that boyfriend that had drugs at one time. I ran away from home and my mom had confronted me about my drinking and I was like, fine, I'll just leave with him. And like, we drove down to Mechanicsville, Maryland, and I just stayed there. It was the dead of winter. There was storms. And the only thing I had were like shorts and a long sleeve t-shirt, and he didn't have anything. Like, that to me sounds pretty crazy, you know, just to protect my drinking. What also seems crazy is, you know, finding a drug dealer in the psych ward and who can hook me up as soon as I get out. That's crazy. But I had finally realized like the insanity that my mind was, you know, I was at college again. My mom had helped me get an apartment to get my degree, these beautiful things in front of me. And the only thing that I can see is that I feel insane. I need something in my body to take me out of myself. Like I had recognized that kind of crazy, and I had never recognized that before. And something switched in me. And I checked the meeting guide, and the first meeting was at 6:30 in the morning. And so I sat on my hands for an hour, and honestly, it was not a pretty hour. You know, in that hour, I had decided, I was like, well, I feel great. Like, I'm going to actually do this. You know, people had been telling me I should actually do AA. I don't know what that means, but I'll try it. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like gathering all of the pills in my apartment that I can find, you know, begging that time runs faster because I will take them all. You know, I just can't be in myself anymore. And so 6:15 finally hits and I drive to the meeting. It's only 2 minutes away. And that was, you know, for the future, that was going to be my first home group for about 6 months while I was at school. But I remember sitting in that meeting and they said, are there any newcomers? And then their first 30 days, and I raised my hand. I was sobbing, hysterical. I said, my name's Kaylin. I'm an alcoholic. I've done it again. I finally see what's wrong. Please help me. And they made it a first step meeting. You know, and that same meeting, this is my sobriety talk now. But that first meeting, there was this woman, Denise, and she had shared, and she had about 9 years sober, and it was such a lovely share. I mean, it hit home, you know. I mean, the way she described her first step, I don't quite remember, but it was basically like, I feel insane and I feel like my life is just exploding. I don't know what to do. So I got a sponsor and started listening to her because my ideas were horrible. And I was like, oh, maybe I should do that. So I ran up to her after the meeting. I was like, Denise, how you doing? My name's Caitlin. Let's be friends. And I do this thing when I'm uncomfortable that I actually don't want to talk about my feelings. I get really excited. And she saw it right away. And she said, honey, let me be very clear with you. I don't give you more than a month to be here. You're not going to make it. And I was like, which was a great opening because I was shocked. And then I was like, well, how do I make it? She was like, why don't you come back tomorrow and we can talk about it for a couple minutes after the meeting. I said, okay. And those words stuck with me, honestly, for my whole sobriety. Because the next day I went to that meeting and she said, I will not be your sponsor because you are not willing. In my eyes, Monica is now a sponsor. She is over a year sober. She will take you through the steps, but still call me every day. I will also be sending you 3 women's numbers that you are to call, and I will double check with them to make sure you called them. And I was like, oh no. I was 2 days sober. And she wanted me to call 3 women a day that I didn't even know. I had to like put it on speakerphone and like go back to my text and see which one I was calling so I didn't forget their name. And it was funny. She just called me the other day. And I was like, hey, do you remember that you said this and that you said you would follow up with them? Did you ever follow up with them? She's like, I can't tell you that. Because what if your butt's on fire again and you need to call people? And I was like, got it. So we still don't know if she ever called the women. But it worked. And that's what I did. And I jumped right in. You know, I went to as many meetings as I could during the day and as many as I could at night. Unfortunately, I was flunking college, you know, and so I got pulled out again by my grandparents who were kind enough to pay for it. They said, you're sober now. What's your excuse for failing? And I was like, you got me. I don't have an excuse. I'm not ready. But you know, I kind of breezed over that part, but you know, those 6 months, I really followed winners and, you know, I called people every day. I got service at the end, you know, around month 5, I had a service position to unlock one of the churches for a meeting. And I felt so, I was like, wow, trust me. Like, that's so crazy. It was such a cool experience, you know? And, I ended up moving back home, because I wasn't in college anymore and I got a sponsor at home and I worked the steps and what that looked like was for me, for my first, second, and third step, you know, for what it looked like for me is I really just had to show up to meetings and be honest about what I was doing and feeling and being willing to take suggestions, you know, because I am someone that loves to come up with these plans. My thought doesn't start at what should I do about this problem? It starts way over here about like, what if this happens, that. It's like, what if all of these things happen? Oh, well, this thing happened. I've been thinking about this for a couple weeks. This is what I'm going to do about it. And I didn't realize that it was actually a great idea to run it by someone and to hear their perspective, like a non-biased point of view. And usually, every time, it was not what I wanted to do. It was the complete opposite. And so I started listening. And I remember doing my 4-step. My sponsor said, yeah, make a list of people. And that stuff. So I went through my Facebook, my Instagram, my contacts list, like everything. And I had like a book, like an actual book of resentments. It was huge because I was so afraid to drink. And my sponsor was like, well, this is, you know, I kind of just rolled with it off the top of my head, but looks like you're willing. And I was like, I am. Thank you. But so we did my 4-step and I actually just went to a 5th-step meeting the other week. And I was reminiscing on my 5th-step experience because I had called my sponsor and said, hey, I'm ready to do my 5th-step. I'm done. She said, great. Come over to my apartment and bring a bathing suit. And I was like, what? And I read her my 5th-step in a bikini. She was in her bikini. We were by her pool. And I'm just like baking out in the sun, like reading the worst parts about myself, like shaking and sweating. And I'm just like looking at her for a reaction. She's just like loving the sun, basking in it. And I'm going to vomit. And then after I like stopped reading and I was like, that's it. She was like, that's it. Great. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're just like me. We have the same secrets. Here are my secrets. Thank you for sharing them with me. Let's jump in the pool. And I was like, okay. So I like did a cannonball in the pool with my sponsor. It was so crazy. But I'll always remember that, you know. And for me, my sixth and seventh step, when it talks about we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, it was a definite challenge for me to do my sixth step, because I thought God was just going to come down and tap me on the shoulder and be like, jealousy removed. And that was it. You know, little did I know, from my experience, being ready to have it removed is when it's presented to me, I have a choice to act how I've always acted, or call my sponsor or pray or whatever and act differently. And that experience will move me past the defect, because the defect was brought to me through my higher power. That's just what I believe. And so definitely six and seven were really tough for me, you know? And then I hit my eighth and ninth step, which is honestly for me, the point where my sobriety made a drastic turn, you know? I wrote down the people that I needed to make amends to. And my sponsor said, which are the ones that you really don't want to do? And I was like, I've already highlighted them. And I like showed her the page and she was like, great. Which ones, you know, do you want to do now? And I said, these. And, you know, on my never ever list was some exes and financial amends and that kind of stuff. And then on this list was my family, because I know they love me. They're like glad I'm sober now. And it's just going to be like dust under the rug. And she was like, awesome, make the ones you don't want to do first. And I was like, oh, she tricked me. So I did. And I got to say, you know, like for me, it was so important to go through the sixth and seventh step before hitting my ninth step amends, because I got to practice being a different person. And after a while of practicing being a different person, when I'm confronted with the amends and making them, the key part for me that I really needed to hear was, did I leave anything out? You know, because from my experience, there was an ex I made amends to. And I mean, I just destroyed everything about this person's life. And I dug and I looked into stuff. And of course, there's 3 months I can't remember. It was probably really bad. And I sat down and I was like, well, is there anything else I left off? And they said, I just want to make one thing very clear. You think you hurt me when you were drinking. I just want to make it clear that you hurt me stone cold sober. You knew exactly what you were doing. And I needed to like excuse myself, because I was like, wow, like that's who I am. You know, without a program, without a liquid solution, that's who I am, you know? And that really grounded me even deeper into sobriety, you know? I'm planning out my financial amends. There are some amends that I haven't done yet. There are some that I'm not able to do because of different states, East Coast, West Coast, but I still plan on doing them. And, you know, I will say my last amends that I'll share about is my amends to my dad, you know, and, well, excuse me, I'm going to share two really quick because they're combined. I had two letters to write. One was to my father and one was to my dad's mom, who had left the hospital and was like, I'm leaving. Good luck, you sign off. And I held this resentment because I was like, why would you take one of the most special things from me and make me sign off on his life support? And I just held it. And I wrote her a letter because my sponsor had pointed out, and this is one of the resentments that I held on my fourth step, that I was like, I was right, you know, like, this is the one. And she was like, did you ever think for 1 second that she lost a son? And I was like, I haven't, you know, like I lost my father, but she lost a son. And so I wrote her a letter and I sent it. And during that time when I was waiting to see if it would be received or if I would get one back or not, she had me write my father's graveside amends. And that I had been sitting on that for a very long time. And I wrote it, and on a cold November rainy day, we I spread his ashes at my family's church that I grew up going to. And I read this letter, and there was a lot of pauses, and I don't know if it made sense coming out of my mouth, but you know, something, you know, that sense of it didn't happen right away, but that sense of, you know, the proudness that I had been waiting for him, waiting to feel from him, you know, the love and compassion that I had been missing out on for years kind of just flowed over me. And I was grateful for my family that's still with me. I get to show up as a niece, you know, as a cousin to six other beautiful, you know, cousins in my family. And it was actually right after that amends, I had gotten the letter from my grandma. And I wrote out all my harms and everything. I don't have too much time to get into, but she had basically said, please call me, you know, and we talked for the first time in 8 years. And it was awesome. It was nothing that I can't even describe it besides divine intervention that happened. Because now we talk on a regular basis. You know, I went down and visited her in Florida, and she is little and adorable, and she's so funny. And I have a relationship back, you know, and 10, 11, and 12, I, you know, do regularly, but for the last couple of minutes, I really want to share about what's been happening to me recently. I'm coming up on 4 years, and I just saw my sponsor a little bit ago, and my life has changed drastically. You know, I was in a relationship for about 2 years, and it ended. It wasn't great. And like, we had all these plans and designs figured out, but like God stepped in. It was like, no, this isn't working. And it was the best thing that's ever happened to me, because, you know, I got service at a Friday night meeting, and I was going to be the service coordinator. I had a key to the church, and it was literally me, 3 years sober at the time, and 10 guys with over 15 years sober. And we would set up the meeting, and my first night there, one of them was like, hey, we usually grab dinner. I don't want you to feel weird, but you know, you can invite some women, but we would love to have you for dinner. And I was like, okay. And now they're like my best friends, you know? We set up the meeting every Friday night, and at 6:30, and then we get dinner until 7:30, and then the meeting starts at 8:00. And two of those guys, after a couple months of this service, last September were like, it was like 7:45 p.m. The meeting was just about to start. And they were like, hey, we're thinking about running a marathon. Do you want to run with us? And I was like, no. Why would I run a marathon? That sounds horrible. And then he was like, just think about it. And I don't know why I said this, but the next words out of my mouth were, yeah, I'll run the marathon with you guys. And so it's me, this guy, John, who has 18 years sober, Justin is 20 years sober, and we're just running four nights a week with each other, you know. And I recruited some ladies in there, and we're all running together. We're doing this together. And we ran the Rehoboth Beach Marathon. And it was the first time like that I could tangibly see in my sobriety that I made a goal, worked up to it, and followed through, you know, with people in AA, you know. And I FaceTimed my sponsor at like when we were crossing the finish line. We're both crying, and like, the pictures are terrible. I'm just like sobbing. And you know, other people in AA came out. They drove to Rehoboth just to run a couple miles. This is probably like 20 people who just came just because. And there's been so many wild things that's happened to me in this year. You know, I've been at the beach on and off this past summer, and I started training to, you know, potentially become a lifeguard, an ocean lifeguard, and it's exhausting. I'm tired. And, you know, those two guys and I decided let's run a marathon every year. So like clockwork, we're starting to train for another marathon, and it's crazy. But, you know, there are so many twists and turns that have been happening in my life. I don't know where I'm going to end up next, but the crazy thing is it's all been from the mouths of people in AA. You know, I'll never forget when I came home from college, my grandparents said no more. I got this job. It was an hourly job. And it was horrible. I was a deli manager, or like a deli front house person. And I said, Rachel, my sponsor was like, Rachel, when can I quit? And she said, you have to wait 6 months. And so I did. Then I became a waitress. I hated it. And then COVID happened. And she said, hey, question, is your college online? And I said, it is. And she said, have you ever thought about looking into that? And I was like, I haven't. And so I ended up taking another job that wasn't in the food industry and starting college again. And little by little, class by class, I ended up graduating during COVID. And she said, what's something that you're really passionate about? You know, and I was like, well, I really love kids. I've been coaching for 10 years. You know, I think this would be, it would be a really cool experience to teach them. She's like, well, you should look into that. You know, and I did. I looked into teaching. And then things happened there. I became an associate teacher, and another position at my old high school opened up, and she said, you should look into it. You know, and it's like these little gifts that my sponsor gives me on like, hey, in sobriety, we're not capsizing ourselves, you know, and I've gotten to experience life to its truest form. You know, I remember, and I only have about a minute left, but I never would have thought the scared, traumatized girl in the midst of her alcoholic terror would have health insurance, be coming up on 4 years sober, have a host of friends that are delightful and have my back no matter what. I'm in the best and most cherishing, loving relationship I've ever been in. You know, to have a relationship with my mom who finally has a year sober, and to have the life that I have now, you know, it just, it doesn't make sense to me, but I hope, my biggest hope for myself and for, you know, everyone here is that I hope I never get too cocky enough to think that I've got this, that that girl just magically transformed into this one. The only difference has been Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful for, you know, being able to come to things like this. I don't know anyone here except for Billy, Sam. So thank you for having me. And thanks for letting me share. Yeah.